From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudet, and this is Idaho Matters. Every day we see new headlines of the war going on in Ukraine as Russia continues to try and annex that country by force. Russia has a long history of taking over territory as it has moved eastward, but for many that's all it was, history, until Russia invaded Ukraine this year. Here to give us a historical perspective on the expansion of Russia and to talk about what's going on the ground right now is Dr. Megan Dixon. She lectures at the College of Idaho. She'll be speaking at Boise State's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and she joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Samantha.
So Russia has been colonizing land for a long time, for a very long time. Can we talk about Russia and the indigenous and Muslim peoples east of the of Volga? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, well, I think one thing I'd like to lay out as a foundation is that Russia has colonized, but most of the other European colonies have too, as well as major states in Asia. And so in some ways, they've always been copying other countries, trying to expand for economic reasons, and also because everybody felt a lot of pressure to make their state bigger at certain points in time. Some of your listeners might know about the Great Game competition that Britain and France got involved in Central Asia in the 19th century. But Russia certainly has been expanding. And I think we could take this back to a time when the state was called Muscovy in the late 1500s, when the state finally kind of got free of Mongol influence that had colonized them from the east. And at that time, and for centuries before, the peoples who were to the east of that area, of what we now call Russia, right around Moscow and those other small towns, really were neighbors, right, up against people who later converted to Islam or just were indigenous people the way that we, you know, have them in other parts of the world that were living in those places. And then over time, the Russian state does expand eastward, conquer those people, and turn them into a single unit.
Wow. And as you mentioned, I mean, this is not unique to Russia. Countries have been doing this for a very, very long time, forever. Let's talk about how Russia has colonized some of these areas. I know that Stalin and some other leaders transplanted Russians into some of the areas they wanted to annex. How did that work?
Well, and you know, I've just been talking with some students about that this term, doing some readings in Central Asian history. And this, again, is a practice used by many empires, including the Qing Empire in China and Peter's growing empire. And so what states would do when they wanted to control territory more is they would move settlers there. And at first, it typically was, you know, fur traders, kind of like in North America, and then later the military, and then you have agricultural settlers. And so Stalin certainly did this in the Soviet Union to try and detach people from places where they had a local political history and put them somewhere else. But in doing so, he was kind of copying Peter the Great in the early 1700s, who really wanted more population out in Siberia. And he brought in prisoners of war from Sweden and Russians from the European portion. And later on, Catherine the Great gets what are called the Volga Germans to come live in the area along the Volga River. So it is definitely a long-standing practice. I think we might argue what's going on in Ukraine is a bit different in that the Ukrainians clearly don't want this. We're in a modern state situation now. And Russians, the Russian regime, I'd like to specify, is really taking very little care about the Ukrainian people.
Wow. So when we're talking about history, is it true that for a lot of history, Ukraine was really Polish territory and not Russian territory?
Yeah, this is so fascinating. I learned about this in school as a graduate student when I studied Polish, and it was such a good experience for me. Because when you look at a single country and its history, you often treat it as kind of foreordained and it's the center of attention. But I found out that there was a state called the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth that lasted for a few hundred years and then really was kind of ended in the late 1700s by Russia, Prussia, and Austria. But they had something that would look to us like democracy. They had what was called the Congress Kingdom, this Polish part of it, and the landowners or the aristocrats would get together and literally vote on things and elect their king. So it was really different than the Muscovite state, which was still copying Mongolian political practices left over from Genghis Khan. So there's definitely a lot of overlap. When I'm trying to listen to Ukrainian, thinking about Polish really helps me a lot more than thinking in Russian, although there's, you know, they're all Slavic, so there's overlap. But you can see some of that connection that even is taking place today where Poland is really wanting to support Ukraine.
Wow. And a lot of history here that I think a lot of people may not be familiar with. Some folks may remember 2014 when Russia invaded and annexed Crimea. I know there has been talk about that, how Russia wanted a territorial buffer between itself and the EU. Why is that important to Russia?
Well, if people remember some of those things, then they might also remember that even as early as 2004, not long after Putin came into power, there was something called the Orange Revolution. So the color orange is associated with this push for Ukrainian-based independence against the Soviet Union, earlier the Russian Empire. And so in 2014, when Russia invaded, and took over parts of the southeastern country of Ukraine, then what you're seeing is Russia really wanting to shut down those moves towards independence because they don't want their own population to see a successful model of removing an authoritarian leader and creating a more democratic society. Very early in the days of this invasion, back in March, I heard a Ukrainian journalist say in an interview that Ukraine is like a lighted shop window to the people of Russia, and the regime does not want that to exist and tempt people to want a different way of life.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. We're speaking with Dr. Megan Dixon. She lectures at the College of Idaho. She's going to be speaking at Boise State's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute about the history of Russian expansion. You mentioned how Russia is worried about people and how they're seeing and feeling what's going on in Ukraine. And when we're talking about since 2014 to now, how has Russia responded to, say, public dissent or people who are protesting? What kind of have changes? Have there been any changes in that time?
Yes. Since Alexei Navalny was arrested in January 2021, when he returned to Russia after surviving his poisoning and getting treated in Germany, the authorities have been clamping down more and more harshly. Responses of military forces to demonstrators got more and more violent over that time. And now, in fact, many of the independent media voices that used to come out of Russia that I listened to have all gone into exile, and they're transmitting from Riga or they're in Georgia. What seemed like a very promising period of time, even as recently as about 5 years ago, now has become a very bleak landscape for people who want to express their dissent inside the country.
Well, I was going to ask you, what have been the responses of your Russian friends been to the invasion? What is life like for regular folks in Russia right now?
Well, I've heard several discussions of the economy, and to some extent, you know, it's hard to get really good data all the time coming out because the government is going to say everything is fine. But to be honest, a couple of my friends have left the country, and one of them is about, I think, 35 years old now, and he's an IT specialist, and he moved to Armenia. Another friend honestly stopped communicating with me because I think it seemed to her too dangerous to communicate with a foreigner still.
Wow.
So it's not true for everyone. I think that was a very cautious friend. But, you know, it's getting, the English language coverage of all this has really been pretty good. I'm very pleased to see that. But I'm sure some of your listeners have heard about the draft recently, which really is not partial. Around the country, they have gone into stores, into hostels, people's workplaces, and pressed them into military service on the spot. And people are getting increasingly upset about this, which is why you hear the official statement saying, oh no, we're done, we're not drafting any more people. It's definitely the case coming from news inside Russia that they are not stopping the draft, and they're continuing to press people into military service. So it's getting much more authoritarian than it was even just a few years ago.
Wow. So do people in Russia today think Ukraine is part of their country?
I think the surveys on that, you know, some people would say yes, probably. They have associations with Ukraine. There was a lot of cultural interaction in the 18th and 19th centuries. Some of the most famous Russian writers like Nikolai Gogol and Mikhail Bulgakov actually grew up in Ukraine and could have written in Ukrainian. So people feel very closely associated. But I think all the people that I listen to are really frustrated with the way that Putin and his elites are running the country. And they very much themselves want to be what they call a normal country. They would like to be federated, and they would very much support Ukraine, just wanting to be a modern state and be independent.
So given what you know about the history of Russia, and you know a lot, were you surprised when Russia invaded Ukraine this year?
Well, I think that question assumes that Ukraine maybe followed a pattern. And I think what's important to remember is that regardless of what the history is, the leaders sometimes choose which part of that history to enact. So I'm not sure that the history of Russia itself made me think they would invade Ukraine, but the behavior of Putin's regime definitely makes it not surprising in the end. A lot of Russians themselves argued over whether it would really happen, and they were surprised. Some others said, no, it's been coming for years. I just heard an analysis yesterday saying that if you look back and look at what Putin has done over the past 10 years, you can see this coming. But hindsight is 20/20. So I would say I couldn't imagine it happening. I was at a conference in two Ukrainian cities 5 years ago in the fall. It's just really heartbreaking and stupid, frankly. And I hope it stops soon.
Wow. We've been speaking with Dr. Megan Dixon. She lectures at the College of Idaho. She's teaching a three-part class about the history of Russian expansion at Boise State's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute that starts today, Thursday. Thanks for coming on the show and giving us a little insight into what's going on today and the past.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's really great opportunity.
Thank you. This is Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.